You're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of To the Journey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iOS, Windows, Android, Kindle, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hi, this is Robert Duncan McNeil, also known as Tom Paris from Star Trek Voyager. You're listening to Trek FM.
This week's edition of To the Journey.
To the journey!
My name is Charlene Schmidt, and with me, as he is every week, is
Tristan Riddell, and with a special appearance by
Lori Sears.
Lori! How has Section 31 been treating you, my dear?
If you can talk about it.
Oh, yeah. Well, you are on kind of a need to know basis, so.
Just
suffice it to say that they gave me the night off.
We're grateful to have you tonight to make a special appearance. It's been a little while since you've been on the show, even though longtime listeners know you started the show with us. So it's great to have you back.
Thank you. I'm really just very happy to be here.
Good, good. And not only are you here with us, but you suggested today's topic, which is Janeway's best command decisions. And I have been looking forward to this conversation all week. Because as I deliberated my choices, I figured you two were juggling the same things, and there are no easy answers here. You know, we're going to have varied answers. We're going to have different reasons why, and I'm sure listeners are going to do the same thing. And I would love to hear everybody's opinions on the forum, but let's kick it off with what we have to say on all this. And Lori, since you picked the topic, why don't you kick us off and tell us the first in your list of Janeway's best command decisions.
Not in any particular order, but I thought this was the best decision to me that she made, and that was to not leave the doctor as some I can turn you on, I can turn you off computer program. When she gave him control of his own on-off switch, as it were, and let him kind of expand and become more than just a computer program, That was an amazing decision. It did so much for the show. To me, I think that's the best one.
Okay. Tell you what, it made my list too. So if we have time, I'll put in an honorable mention, but this is definitely a very impactful decision, if nothing else. I mean, I would say it was a good decision, certainly, because what would the doctor have been if he had just stayed a very monotone hologram?
What do you think would have happened if she just kind of left him to his own devices? Like, do you think he'd still become the individual that he is today? Or do you think he would have been stunted? Or do you think he would have found some sort of way to continue on? Or would he have been just the caretaker doctor?
I think to begin with, I mean, in the first episode, he was so dry. He didn't even have his voice, the same voice that he used later on. I don't know. I think if he'd not been given that freedom, he would just still be, please state the nature of the medical emergency every time and never much else to him. But part of that, too, I think, was not only did she let him expand his program, but she also, after a while, considered him a friend instead of just some glorified replicator.
True.
I think that really made all the difference in the world when she started seeing him in a different way.
Right. Yeah, it got the party started when Kes kind of reached out and said, hey, this guy is an important asset to you all. You need to treat him with respect. To the on-off switch to, hey, he's sentient life here. And
right.
We've already had that debate, or at least we certainly examined it on a previous episode. Going back to your question, Tristan, I really think we would have just had the same kind of bitter, caretaker-esque hologram the whole 7 years, and his dry sense of humor is okay. It certainly would have been entertaining, but we would have lost out on so much.
We definitely would have gotten the doctor that we have today, or at least at the end of the 7 seasons, but I think it would have been interesting, and I think I would have liked to have seen what he would have become in the face of adversity to Janeway. And I could totally see Janeway discovering something in like season four where he sings opera and likes to paint, and it's all hidden somewhere in some sort of deep subroutine where he develops his own kind of Unimatrix Zero, where like when he falls asleep or when he's deactivated, he can do whatever he wants, where it's his own holodeck inside his head. You know, and that's where he was able to develop his own creativity, because he had that drive, because he was established and he was on for that long. I don't know. That's just, I'm not saying I would have liked to have seen that in opposition of what we got. Mm-hmm. It just, I think it would have been a different dynamic that would have been interesting.
It would have been interesting, definitely. And now I have this vision in my head of the Doctor painting with Janeway in the Da Vinci program after she discovers these subroutines you mentioned. I don't know.
Yeah, I can see that.
Why not? Why not?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so Tristan, what is your first pick here for best command decision?
Well, I'm going to go in chronological order. I don't know if it's the best command I don't know if what I've picked was the best command decisions that she ever made, but it's definitely some of my favorites, and the first one is in Deadlock.
Okay.
And I think it's the decision when one of the two Janeways decided to destroy the ship and send Kim over, as well as a young Naomi, to the other ship.
Dang, that's two on my list. Wow, we're knocking them down.
I think it was just, it was a fantastic episode, and it was a fantastic moment, and it took a big set of ovaries in order to just really sacrifice the crew for the sake of the other crew. And she knew that another Voyager would live on, and so she had solace in that, but at the same time, she wasn't going to allow her own crew to be mutilated and harvested. Mm-hmm. And it was a very dramatic decision, and there's a big explosion, but yet Kim and Naomi were able to survive and continue on with that other Voyager who we saw for the rest of the years. And it was a gutsy move, and it was an interesting decision that only sci-fi can tell us.
Absolutely true. I like the way you put that.
Mm-hmm. I love that part where the Vidians come on the ship. Welcome to the bridge. Pow! Yeah.
Boom!
That's the best.
I wish I could count how many times we've referenced that moment on this show.
Yeah.
Oh, that should be a part of the drinking game. We haven't added anything to that in a while. I'll get on that. Because, this is one of the best episodes, and certainly of season two, if not the whole series. It's just freaking awesome. And I agree, it was a very good command decision. It's kind of the best win-win decision you could possibly have in that kind of situation. Two Voyagers, one's going to have to go on, the other's not. You've got dead Harry, you've got dead Naomi. You balance it out, and everybody's happy in the end.
Yeah, I wish that I had that kind of luck where, you know, if I needed to sacrifice myself, I'd just be like, it's cool, man, I got another guy. You know, like, I earned him on the first level, so it's cool.
Yeah, no problem. My clone is ready. All right, well, I guess we'll move on to my first pick, although you already know that two of mine are now gone. So I'll go on to something else. And I don't actually, before I even do this, I've got a question for you guys. Did you have trouble defining best as far as what constitutes the best command decisions?
Yeah, I had a hard time because, you know, and on one hand, I was like, oh, this was a really gutsy move and it got the job done.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, like, a lot of people died or, you know, it wasn't technically ethical or something like that. And then there's other times when, like, hey, this was fun, but it's, you know, not really sexy. So, you know, why do we really need to talk about it? You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Okay. This is the problem I had, because certainly Janeway had some difficult decisions that she made, for better or for worse. Mm-hmm. She had some gutsy decisions that she made. You can look back and say in hindsight, oh, that was not necessarily a good decision. So ultimately what I had to go with was, in the context of what she and we as the audience knew at the time, what was a good decision for then? So that's kind of how I shape my list. And so I'm going to kick off my first choice with Janeway's alliance with the Borg in Scorpion. And I know that there's people screaming right now. I don't care. It's my choice.
When I was thinking about choices, and you know, even right before we came on the air, I was just like, well, don't pick that one because that's going to go on your worst decision list.
No.
Seriously, that is number one on my worst
is
decision
it really?
List that,
okay.
that I made in tandem with this list.
Man, okay. I'm sure you're not the only one, but I would really like to explain myself now.
Go ahead.
Okay,
well, think about it, guys. I mean, given that what we know in season three, the Borg are still dangerous, mortal enemies, and it is one lone ship out there right on the edge of the heart of Borg space, and their only other alternative is a race capable of destroying the Borg. That means they're uber powerful. Which side do you take? I mean, the only other real option they had, of course, was Chakotay's idea to lay low and let them fight it out. You could argue that that was the best choice, but she had to make a call, and she did it, and I feel like she made the most balanced decision she could, given the knowledge that she had at the time, even as crazy as it sounded. But really, it did work, never mind the implications that it had later on with Species 8472. She couldn't consider that at the time. She had no idea what they were even about, hardly.
Isn't this a stereotypical decision of a military decision made in ignorance, complete ignorance, where it's like, okay, I don't understand you. I don't know why you're doing the things that you're doing. And so I'm going to help destroy you because I'm just confused.
Okay, mm-hmm. That's a really good point. But you know what? Yes, it was short-sighted. I totally concede on that point. But if I were being threatened not by one, but two alien species who could easily decimate me in a matter of seconds, I would probably be quick to make a decision as much in favor of me getting out alive as possible. That's how I think about it.
But there was nothing up to that point that would have led them to believe they could trust the Borg. So, I don't know. That just seemed strange. And is she's totally blinded by her need to get home rather than turn
this
around and just stop? I don't know. I always thought that too. What was so difficult about waiting it out and then maybe going on? They'd kill each other off, then keep going.
And she heavily shifted the balance of power in that sector and in that region, mm-hmm. which as a Starfleet captain, you're not supposed to do, especially since she has no connection with either of the species. And she's completely basing this decision off of a telepath that just got her powers like 3 days ago.
Oh, come on now. It wasn't 3 days ago. Well, maybe in the life of an O'Compan, it felt like 3 days ago, probably.
Just think about if Picard made that decision with Deanna Troi, and Deanna Troi just became a counselor, you know, like that year. And she's like, oh, yeah, I'm just developing my powers. And you should totally go to war with the Romulans.
I'm wondering if the whole idea that they didn't really know how to communicate with Species 8472 was what inhibited her from considering a little more of their point of view. Had she considered that, maybe she could have possibly opened a dialogue with them, made an alliance with them instead. But even so, that also, does that shift the power or the balance of power in the Delta Quadrant? You could say yes.
You could.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I still stand by this. I still think she did the best she could at the time. It was a very gutsy call. It was one of those things where something had to happen, and as the captain, you have to decide. So, for better or for worse, she did it. And I think she did the best she could.
I might be able to understand where you're coming from if part two of Scorpion was not completely devoted to explaining how Janeway was wrong in every single way.
You might be right about that. Yeah.
That's all I'm going to say. If it was just Scorpion 1 and then we move on to the gift, maybe. All right? Maybe.
You know, that would have totally turned things around, would it have not?
I think so.
Yeah. The one thing I do like about Scorpion 2 is it does show Chakotay looking pretty freaking good.
He's kind of shown as like, yeah, I was right. And my captain was wrong. And if she listened to me, maybe she'd be conscious right now.
Yeah. If anything, that was one of the worst decisions she made, which was really not listening to him at all. She had already made her decision by then, did not care what he had to say, and off they went.
I think we can all agree on that one.
Mm-hmm. I think so. All right. Why don't we kick off round two? Lori, what is your second pick?
My second pick is in The Thaw. I know a lot of people don't like that episode, but it's just so...
Tristan is gagging right
now. I know, I'm sorry. But I really do. I love it. I love the fact that, I mean, the creepy, evil, devil guy Fear is killing off the people stuck inside that program. And I love that she figures out a way to get in that program and make him think it's really her, and then eventually shut him down, and then he realizes it's not even her at all. That's so awesome. That was just, it's like, you're so conniving. I love it.
It was ballsy. I did love that.
It was.
What is better than Janeway defeating Fear itself?
Right.
I can't think of much. It's right up there at the top. I'm sorry, Tristan. I'm with you, Lori, on this one. I love The Thaw. I love the fact that she defeats Fear. She deceives Fear? Come on, that's awesome.
Exactly.
No comment, Tristan?
I got nothing to say about this episode.
Okay, well, we could brag on for a few minutes.
I feel like Lori, I mean, yeah, like her solution, you know, was pretty cool. And I feel like her going, like her not risking anybody else.
Right.
But yet going in herself. Yeah, I think that's a pretty cool decision. It was a great 30 seconds to a horrible 42 minutes.
Yeah. Well, okay, I'll be with you on that. There were so many moments in that episode when it was just, cringe. Harry is a baby. No, leave that part. But yeah, I love the way that ended.
I would say those 42 minutes are totally worth suffering for the last 30 seconds alone. And I don't even think that the first 42 minutes were suffering, despite Baby Harry.
There were some moments, but...
There were some good moments. I mean, Harry almost died. You got that.
How many times is that?
Yeah.
Oh, 47. I don't know.
Something along those lines.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that was a good one. How about you, Tristan? What's number two?
Number two for me is when Janeway sent the crew away at the end of Year of Hell Part 1. This was another circumstance where she did not listen to Chakotay, and Chakotay ended up being right again.
Lo and behold.
Yeah. I think we need to give Chakotay more credit.
We
and
do.
I feel like everybody else does. And, you know, the ship was falling apart. People were dying. They could not sustain the ship, and the ship could not sustain the crew. And it was a sad thing. And, you know, Janeway didn't want to break up the family, but Chakotay's like, hey, I don't want to do this either. But, you know, in command, you need to make tough decisions. You know, Janeway, of all people, should understand this. And it just took her a little longer than it should have, but she made the right decision in the end. And even though it hurt, she kept a skeleton crew. They ended up developing the most massive reset button in Star Trek history.
Epic reset button. Totally.
Epic reset button, and everything turned out okay.
This is true. I mean, yeah, that even beats the deadlock reset button. I mean, this is as grand as reset button gets, for sure, yeah.
Like when you look up reset button in the Star Trek encyclopedia, it has a picture of Voyager slamming into the Krynum vessel.
It better if it doesn't.
Yeah.
She really should have listened to Chakotay. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
The reason why I chose this one is just because it was probably one of the hardest to make.
I bet.
Certainly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of emotion going, well, certainly with that episode as a whole. And it's, of course, one of the most popular as well. But... Mm-hmm. That is a really tough thing, I would think, to set aside your pride and say, yeah, we're not going to make this.
Yeah.
That's tough. Yeah. That's got to be really tough. I can't even say I've been in that kind of a situation, but if I were, I think I would struggle with that too. And hopefully I would have somebody as wise as Chakotay by my side to guide me. Well, you know what? While we're talking about Year of Hell, I'm going to choose another Year of Hell decision, and that was... Janeway going down with the ship, destroying the Krynum vessel. Time's up.
Yeah, in that total Mulgrew voice that she has, like, time's up.
Yes, yes. So horribly awesome, or awfulsome. Awfulsome, that's the word.
Awfulsome.
Yeah.
Yes, that to me epitomizes a good captain. Going down with the ship. I mean, everything is in flames. She is sacrificing herself and Voyager for the greater good to solve this huge freaking problem. And of course, like we said already, epic reset button. She does this with, I think, the intent of, if I just kill myself, we're all going to be better for it. We're going to start over. None of this will have happened. So it's sort of like yesterday's Enterprise in a way, where alternate Picard, you know, he's fighting the Klingons and his ship's up in flames. He's about to be boarded. He's like, oh, that'll be the day. And doesn't give up. You don't give up when you're the captain. You go down with the ship. So that is something I had to choose right off the bat. That made my list instantly.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's probably her most heroic of the whole series, really, when you think about it.
I would say Year of Hell is about as epic as Voyager gets. I don't know. Timeless is up there, too. But yeah, how do you beat that? I think there's a reason why it's considered the best of Voyager. Mm-hmm. We can't ignore that.
Absolutely.
Let's jump into round three.
My number three is getting rid of Tuvix.
Oh, I was wondering if somebody was going to bring this up. I wasn't going to touch that with a 10-foot pole.
Me neither, but Lori, go ahead and I will rebut you.
Okay, all right. So here was my argument. Okay, she knew that she needed, I don't know about Neelix so much, but she knew she needed Tuvok. And here's why. Here's my proof. Okay. In Prime Factors, when he just said at the end, after he had been caught stealing that thing, the space folding thing, and he wanted, Tuvok wanted to quit. He wanted to just say, okay, I'll just ride this one out. She would not let him quit. She said she needed him. So then here comes Tuvix later on. She had to get him back. She had to have him back. That's my proof right there. Neelix, however, whatever. But that was why I think she needed Tuvix back. And I know that was a difficult decision. That's a horrible ethical dilemma I can't imagine being presented with. But that one guy, he didn't deserve to live over the two previous people. I don't know. That's my argument. I think the two people, the original people who were alive, deserve to be alive more than that guy did. So...
okay. And this has been argued so many times.
I know.
But
I'm sure. I thought about not bringing it up. Then I thought, how can I not bring it up? Somebody's going to say it's a bad idea. Somebody's going to say it's a good idea. I think it's a good idea.
No, actually, I love the fact that you did include this on your list just because this makes a lot of the worst command decisions that Janeway has ever done lists. And for just as valid of reasons, I think... this went into my, this was a tough decision category, where I didn't necessarily think it was a good decision or a bad decision. She just had to make a decision as the captain. So, therefore, I couldn't include it as a best decision just because it was difficult. That's not necessarily the best decision. Even though that was part of the argument I made for Scorpion. Oops. But, well, maybe I thought Tuvix through a little more just because it's been such a heated thing since this episode aired like 18 years ago. I don't think it was the best. It was just really incredibly difficult, and it was one of those situations where she was damned if she did, damned if she didn't.
That's pretty much exactly verbatim how I felt with this decision. Like, I couldn't put it on either list of good or bad because... you know, Char, you said it best. I mean, what you said echoed exactly how I feel.
Okay. Should we leave it at that?
I think so.
Okay. Right. Well, in that case, let's move on to your next pick, Tristan.
Okay, so this one may be a little controversial, and I'm not exactly... not all of the decisions that she made after she made this decision is great, but the main one I feel like is pretty good, and that is hunting down Ransom and the Equinox. You know, Voyager, I guess, could have just cut their losses and ran and said, like, okay, well, that guy's crazy. You know, let's just try to continue to go home. But there was another representative of Starfleet in the Delta Quadrant. There was someone wearing the uniform who was betraying it. And we've seen Picard, you know, yell at Wesley about this. We saw Sisko yell at Eddington about it. And those are some of my favorite moments in Star Trek where... the captains are screaming, you betrayed your uniform. And that's exactly what Ransom did. And Janeway's like, this is not going to stand. I'm going to decommission him as captain, and I'm going to decommission his vessel. And because this is not what Starfleet stands for. Now, not every single decision that she made after that or following that was the best thing that she could have done. I feel like it kind of was a little bit of Captain Ahab, but...
Yes,
a little bit.
The decision to hunt needed to be made, and it was the right decision. And also, I feel like she partly made up for it at the end by absorbing the Equinox crew into Voyager. And she could have left them there, she could have stranded them there, but or she could have locked them away. But what she did was she stripped them of rank, which they deserved to be stripped of. Mm-hmm. And then absorb them into the crew, saying, you're going to work to regain our trust. And I felt like this was just a horrible situation that not many Starfleet officers are faced with, you know, having to turn on other Starfleet officers. And it just, I feel like she made the right call.
Wow. Okay. You've totally changed my perspective on this because, okay, without your wonderful insight here, Janeway's behavior in Equinox goes down as some of the worst. That would make my worst list. But I agree with you. The initial decision to go after Ransom was a good decision. It's just the fact that she went too far that jades me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I can't argue with that. Yeah.
Yeah, she goes way too far with it. She just, like you said, Ahab, the whale, she just goes completely crazy over it. And it's like she's possessed or something. And I can't handle it. I don't like that version of Janeway, but...
Mm-mm.
You're absolutely right. The initial decision to try and rein this guy in, shut him down, was a good idea. He did need to be stopped, and she was really the only person who could do it.
I didn't enjoy watching Janeway become a vigilante. That wasn't... I really have a hard time watching that episode, those episodes. Mm-hmm. But after what you said, that makes sense.
Yeah,
it really does. The comparison to Captain Ahab makes sense.
Yeah, you've got to separate that very first idea and then what became of it. And then it's a very different thing. So thank you for that.
Well, hey, no problem. I'm glad you guys could see past the craziness in the middle.
Yeah, the next time I watch Equinox, I might go into it with a slightly different attitude just because of that and see it a little differently. That'll be nice.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, Char, what was your number three so that you can take us home?
A lot of my choices were taken in the first round, so I'm going to go with an honorable mention, and it is from a very early episode, Parallax, where she makes B'Elanna the chief engineer.
Mm. Oh, I'm so glad that you chose that because that was my that was my number four. And
all right,
I'm so glad that you brought that up because I was like, should I pick? You know, at times when she promoted people or chose them for crew positions, and I thought I'd go for more situational responses, but I was sad that I didn't mention that, so I'm so glad that you brought that up.
Well, for the very reason that you just stated, that's why it became an honorable mention, because it was just one of those things that she had to do. It wasn't necessarily, I don't know, it's one of those command decisions that's not quite the same as, say, the Equinox.
Right.
Mm-hmm. If that makes any sense. I don't know how to really explain it, but... If you consider just how new everything was way back when we were first watching this in 1995, all we really knew about Torres was that she was angry and that she broke Joe Carey's nose. And yet she still won Janeway over to become the chief engineer because Janeway saw the potential that Chakotay knew she had and did the right thing.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And they both geeked out.
Yes, they totally nerded out over technobabble, went off in the shuttle together, and that led to Janeway giving her a fair shake. And I said, I think that actually says a lot about Janeway in general. She kind of has these reform people that she brings in. First it was Tom Paris, then there's B'Elanna, later on it's Seven of Nine. She likes to take these lost causes and reform them into the potential she sees in them, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she does.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then I thought, well, then if B'Elanna makes the list, what about Neelix and Kes getting on the ship? Because they did stuff too. And like, no, that's the best one.
Having Tom come aboard was a really, you know, as the helmsman, it was a pretty awesome decision. But
right, that too.
When you compare it to B'Elanna, that's Yeah, I just don't think you can get any better than that.
Yeah, I think B'Elanna is a slightly different thing. We know from the beginning that Tom Paris is just an amazing pilot. Of course he's going to become the helmsman when Stoddy's dead. But engineer? Well, there's also a lot of politics involved in this one because she's choosing a Maquis over the Starfleet officer who's technically, maybe on paper, a little more qualified, but she's got the practical work experience and know-how to really get things done. It's just instinctive to her, I think, more than formal education. It's not that she doesn't have like a technically sound education. It's just she really, really knows what she's doing. But consider, again, very beginning of the episode, we're supposed to have a lot of tension, right, between Starfleet and Maquis, and picking a Maquis was not only a brave move to say to the other Maquis, hey, you're going to be treated with respect, and we're not going to treat you as second-class crew members here. You've got a chance. We're going to give B'Elanna a chance. And at the same time, Starfleet crew, you're going to have to suck it up and make room for these guys, because they're a part of the crew, too.
Yeah, and Chakotay made a fantastic case for the very reasons that you're stating.
Mm-hmm. Right, he really did. He did a fantastic job of making her consider, and then from there, B'Elanna took it and proved herself. So, but debates are not the only thing that we've had going on Trek FM this week, and so why don't we show a little preview of what else has been happening on the network?
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Pitching a piece of the action movie.
I think we can definitely
say that the Transformers
planet doesn't work. They might go for that. Would you go for that, Drew?
I mean, personally, I would shy away from it because then you'd be...
Or would you shy away it would from be, it?
You're a bad person.
Earl Grey.
William T. Riker.
Imagine now if he'd come back with a goatee or mutton chops. We could have been a very different Riker.
Hipster Riker. Number one, are you wearing glasses?
No, it's Geordi's visor.
I'm reading a pad that you've never heard of before.
The Ready Room.
Inside a Lost Time with Mark Cushman.
But something else that you'll find out in book two is that they almost didn't have Leonard Nimoy and Mr. Spock for season two of Star Trek. His agent wanted more money for Leonard, and for good reason, because when he signed on to do the series, he was supposed to be a supporting actor, and yet he was getting more fan mail than even William Shatner, who was the star of the show, yet only a fraction of the money.
The Orb.
Move along home as a TOS episode.
Sisko comparing First Contact to dating girls felt like something that Kirk would do as well, you know, teaching Charlie Evans about girls and Charlie X, something like that.
To the journey!
Voyager on Blu-ray.
I know that there's been some outtakes done, because you can find clips of them on YouTube, but there's gotta be more. And I want to see them all.
Warp 5.
Andorians on Enterprise.
And so they took this idea where they had antenna, and they took this idea where they were blue and from someplace cold, or I don't even know if they were someplace cold when they were on the TOS, and they just made everything better.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Iris Stephen Bear recap.
I think when you look at the work that was done on Deep Space Nine, what becomes apparent is a group of people who do not feel like they need to do what the original series did in order to accomplish what the original series accomplished.
Melodic Treks.
Apparently, at one point, Patrick Stewart felt he might be able to actually play on screen himself, although it was delicately pointed out to him by Bros Martin that he wasn't up to that standard quite yet.
Literary Treks.
Peaceable Kingdoms with Peyton Ward.
I don't really remember why I was the one chosen to bat cleanup, other than the fact that I think Margaret, our editor, wanted Picard and the Enterprise E to factor into the final installment, and she had already tapped me to write that story.
Matter Stream.
Star Trek Axanar with Alec Peters and Richard Hatch.
If you've ever experienced war or any kind of conflict where everything is life and death, there's a certain kind of resolve, truth, experience that you come to that I don't think too many people can understand or ever really really empathize with.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of our shows. We have new Trek material coming to you every single day of the week now. You can find us on virtually any platform, or you can just go to our website, go to trek.fm/pd for the podcast directory, and access everything there. Now, before we go, we need to talk a little bit about our sponsor. So, Tristan, why don't you tell us about that?
Our sponsor for this show is Audible.com. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers, Audible has something for everyone. You'll be happy to hear that both Mosaic and Pathways are available from Audible. As a Trek.fm listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice, along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm. And we thank you and Audible for supporting To The Journey and Trek.fm.
Now, as excited as I was for this show, I am just as excited for the next show because we just keep coming up with gold. I love it. We're going to return to our series of season marathons, and next up is season 3, which, incidentally, tends to be one of my favorites. So I am definitely excited for an ultimate season 3 marathon. So until then, this has been To The Journey.
To the journey!